G'day team, welcome to the U Project. A month or so ago, we did an episode called Ungiveupable. Now, that went off like a frog in a sock, didn't it, Melissa?
It sure did.
It did. It went a little bit nuts, let's be honest. And it had kind of double the listens we would have on a normal first day. And people shared it and it was a little bit of podcast wildfire, let's be honest. So, but in that episode, there was a lot of kind of rambling at the start with Melissa and I waxing and waning about stuff and a fair bit of fluff. So this literally is that episode without all of the fluff. It's just the guts of it. We've left all the good stuff in. We've taken out the fluff. So this is Ungiveupable. Enjoy. All right. I want to talk about the propensity that we have to give up, to stop, to throw in the towel, to make excuses, to rationalize not doing it anymore. And so, as you would have seen, I'm calling this podcast Becoming Ungiveupable, which is a ridiculous title, but it made me laugh when I thought of that word, ungiveupable, because I would like to be ungiveupable. I don't think I am that, but I think I'm working towards it. And I don't know that it depends what you call giving up too. I'm not talking about sometimes we just decide to not do something because that's strategically necessary or medically necessary or practically necessary. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking today about the things that we just throw the towel in on that we know that we shouldn't. The things that we rationalize when we know our rationale is actually bullshit. And the times when, and again, I don't mean to be any judgment in this, just acknowledgement, because I have done, not only have I done this, I've done it many, many, many times. So I'm speaking from personal experience, that is me doing it, and also personal experience working with tens of thousands of people for decades who have also struggled with this idea of maintaining the behavior, doing the thing, doing the work, creating new habits, creating a new operating system, creating a new behavioral default setting, a new eating default setting, exercise default setting, work default setting, relationship default setting, whatever it is, so that that thing that we used to do when we were temporarily motivated becomes the thing that we do all the time now, because we've created a new blueprint. We've created a new system, a subconscious, conscious, behavioral, and practical operating system that aligns with our goals and our purpose and our values. And so what we know is, and I've mentioned this a few times over the years, that gym owners can sell, or gyms can sell, more memberships than the gym can accommodate, because they know that people won't come. They know that people will make decisions that they don't follow through on. They know that people will come in the door, they'll hand over their money, they'll sign up for a year or 2 years, or they'll sign up on a direct debit, weekly, monthly, whatever it is. And more than likely, they will not use that gym or those resources or that membership the way that they intended to on day one. More people won't do it than will. So the gym that I currently train at has, I think it's around 1,500 or 1,600 members. I don't have data on how many go or don't go. But I go at all times of the day, and I can tell you I see a lot of the same people there. And I'm there 7 days a week, and it's not often I see new people.
Yeah.
But you would think that if all of those 1,500 or 1,600 people were training, that I would see just constantly different people, and I don't. So, you know, the best guess is that there, or my best guess is that there are somewhere around 15 to 20% of people who train, who are current members, who train consistently and well and do what they intended to do. There's, and again, this is bro science. This is from 40 years of working in gyms and watching. There's maybe another 20% who are somewhat spasmodic. There's maybe another 20% who go every now and then. And then there's 40% who are current members who pretty much never go.
Mm.
And so now that's not the fault of the gym. That's just a reflection on, or a commentary on, our ability to do the thing that we set out to do.
Yeah.
So I have a few questions. I want to go through some general stuff, some practical stuff, some cognitive stuff, And I want to ask a few questions. And I guess the reason that I'm very passionate about this is because as a coach, personal trainer, exercise scientist, you know, high performance speaker, blah, blah, all the shit that I do. Not an expert though, by the way, not an expert, but just a bloke who's spent a lot of time talking to people about change. Like literally you think about my job. When I go in to work with a company at 1,000 people or 10 people, we're talking about change. That is, how do we think better, do better, connect better, perform better, serve our clients better, create a better culture? How do we do better? Better equals change, positive change. When someone comes to my workshop or a seminar, they're not there because they want no results or no change or no difference. They're there because they want to change. There's something about the way they think or do life or behave or interact or communicate or experience the world around them that they want to change. When someone joins a gym, it's the same. When someone sees a dietitian, it's the same. When someone jumps into my mentoring group on Monday nights, as you know, we're nearly finished our 12-week program, it's the same. When someone buys one of my books, it's because they want to learn or they want to evolve or they want to be prompted or motivated or they want to be informed. Because why? Because something's not working. Why do people listen to this podcast? Well, for a range of reasons, but one of the dominant reasons is because there's shit I want to learn and understand and know, because there's stuff about me or my body or my thinking or my habits or my life or my behavior or my outcomes or my relationships or my self-talk or my stories. There's something that I need to change. I know I need to change, but by the way, I've known that I've needed to change it for 10 years and I haven't. So that's the conversation. The conversation is, why not? How do I become the person that makes the decision, that creates the plan, that implements the plan, that does the work, that adapts to the bullshit, that works around the messiness of life and the messiness of people and the messiness and uncertainty and unpredictability of things, events, happenings? How do I be that person that in the middle of all of those uncontrollables and variables, me, the controllable, I can control me. I can control my behavior and to an extent my thoughts and my choices and my reactions. How do I be the person that doesn't keep giving up? And why am I not that person already? Do I have a history of stopping and starting? This is a question for you, the listener. Do you have a history? Again, it's not about beating yourself up. This is just about being honest. This is about being aware. This is about going, you know what? I do. I keep stopping and starting. I'm going to go, welcome to a really big club. That's okay. You're not bad. You're not broken. You're not weird. You're human. Me too. I've spent a lot of my life starting and stopping things that I shouldn't have stopped. I should have just maintained. But did I? No. Am I broken and weird? No, I'm just like you. We're the same. So the question is not, what's wrong with me? The question is, what is it that precipitates this falling off the horse all the time or off the wagon, the metaphoric wagon that doesn't exist? What is that? So do I have a history of stopping and starting? And what's really stopped me? Like, why do I really give up? And if we're being really honest, okay, I'll be really honest. Why have I stopped in the past? Well, the main reason is it's hard. The end. And it's hard. It's uncomfortable sometimes. It's impractical. It's unfamiliar. It doesn't, in the moment, it doesn't suit me. In the moment, you know what I want in the moment? I want fucking cake. That's why. And I know that in the moment, I can gratify myself. I can self-gratify with cake. I can self-gratify with chocolate milk and ice cream mixed in the blender. I can self-gratify with a hamburger with fucking white bread sandwiches with potato cakes and salt and pepper and cheese and sauce. Oh, fuck. I'm getting myself into a state as I speak. Come on. Right? And I know that I can eat. You know, I just talk about food because that's my issue. Not drugs, not booze. But for me, that's been my issue. Why did I do it? Well, I did it because it made me momentarily feel fucking amazing. And so the biggest challenge for me, and dare I say, the biggest challenge for many of you moving forward, brothers and sisters, is our ability, our ability to delay gratification. Our ability in the middle of that shit, in the middle of that moment of fuck, will I, won't I? In the middle of that moment of temptation and that fuck, no one's looking, no one will know, I deserve this. Like what we do is we have this inner war where we start to tell ourselves a story that we know is bullshit and we start to rationalize it. And usually the antidote or the justification is it's all right, it's just now. It's all right, I'll go for a run later or I'll start again tomorrow. I'll be back on track tomorrow and then it's July. This is what we do. And the reasons that we do that are many. One of them is that we are in many ways hardwired for pleasure. We are and we are hardwired for instant gratification. And of course, as do I, we just love feeling fucking great. But the problem is that feeling fucking great is very short-lived. Nobody who is out of shape or overweight or overfat or unhealthy, and I mean all of these things with respect because I have been all of those, nobody goes and overindulges and then 2 hours later feels great. Mm-hmm. Nobody. Everybody, either physically or emotionally or psychologically or all of those, when they've just gone and overeaten, and eating a whole lot of food that their body doesn't need, where they've got this inner battle going on because they simultaneously want to feel great in the moment, but they also want to change their body over time. Nobody feels great about that. And this is our challenge. Our challenge is that, well, one of the big challenges with this is that the journey that we need to take, this is why we talk about the narrow path, because very few people take this journey. And this journey is the, I am not going to do that thing that makes me feel momentarily good. But also what's not going to happen is today, I'm not going to change significantly. I'm going to avoid the cake, or I'm going to avoid the chips and the potato cake sandwich, but I'm not going to necessarily lose weight today.
Mm.
I'm not going to wake up tomorrow and be 10 kilos better off. I'm not going to wake up tomorrow with abs because my journey is maybe a 3, 6, or 12-month journey to get to the place where I feel and look and function the way that I want. So what I'll do is I'll just eat this shit right now and I'll start tomorrow. And that dialogue, I will eat this shit and start tomorrow, that becomes a record in our brain that plays on repeat for fucking decades. And some of you, I'm talking right to you. I'm saying you need to take that record off that turntable, smash it in a million pieces and create a new operating system. And also we need to get to the point where we stop looking for something or someone or some pill or some program or some potion or some fucking scientific breakthrough to do the work, Because not only does doing the work ourselves create the outcome that we want, the physical outcome, right? Not only does it create the outcome, but what it does, it also changes who we are and how we think and how we operate and how we do life. Because when you finally get to the point where you go from being the person who's going around and round and round in this kind of groundhog day existence of starting and stopping and losing a bit and gaining a bit or giving up cigarettes and taking them up or whatever, it doesn't need to be anything about food or dope or cigarettes or booze. It could be some other destructive habit, right? But when we keep going around and round and round in circles, we just build an existence for ourselves that's almost impossible to get out of. And time stands still. You know, and at the same time it flies and we kind of lose perspective. And so for us, it's really necessary to go, the answer is me. There is no shortcut or hack or quick fix, not to create lasting change. And we are challenged because all around us, you know, there would be many businesses many businesses, many products, many services, many people that would be out of business if everyone in Australia and around the world stopped buying quick fix type services.
Yeah.
A lot of businesses would go broke tomorrow.
Yep.
Right? If everyone stopped buying the shortcut, the fat burner, the this, the that, the 8 weeks of this, the 4 days of that, the hack, the this, like if everyone just went, well, I've tried 37 different shortcuts and here I am worse than when I started. Worse. Not even in the same place. I'm worse.
Yeah.
So after you do 37 shortcuts or 37 miracle cures or pills, or you listen to 37 gurus who will tell you how to get the result without doing the work, right? At some stage, hopefully you get to the point where you go, oh, they don't actually care about me. They just want my money. And also not only don't they care about me, they don't actually know me. And this is why sometimes I polarize people for a range of reasons, because I say fuck a million times, probably that's part of it. Ah, get over it though. But the other part is because my message is not sexy.
Yeah.
My message is not feel good. My message is not, oh yeah, you can do anything. You can't fucking do anything. You can't. You can't run 100 meters in 9 seconds. You can't get up on the roof of the house and fly to the house next door. You fucking can't. We can't all become prime minister. We can't all be elite athletes. We can't all be world famous singers. We can't, for a range of reasons. That's not negative. That's just fucking real. But however, asterisk, most of us can do a lot more than we're currently doing. And so, you know, I think we need to step out of the self-help bullshit and into the practical reality of, okay, I'm a grown-ass man. I'm a grown-ass woman. I have, if I'm being honest, you know, I've been going around in circles with the same issue for a very long time. And I've asked 1,000 people 1,000 questions, and I've read this and I've done that and I tried this and I tried that. But nonetheless, here I am and I'm still doing the same thing that doesn't work. I'm still choosing to do things. I am still consciously choosing to do things which self-sabotage my own goals. I am not accidentally eating shit. I am choosing it. And the reason that I'm choosing it is because I'm not fully committed to the process of changing my life, habits, behaviors, outcome. Because being fully committed, like, why do people commit to 12, 8, and 10-week programs? Well, because they're 12, 8, and 10 weeks long. That's why. Because it's short term. Because it's temporary. Because I can stop. Right? But why don't people do 40-year programs? What? Because on a subconscious level, we want to get out of jail card.
Yeah.
We like the idea of looking permanently amazing and having a permanently, I'm talking about, you know, for our potential. I'm not talking about Insta model. I'm talking about whoever you are, wherever you are, what 8 or 9 or 10 out of 10 is for you, not compared to anyone. When we go, okay, everyone, put up your hand if you want permanent positive change. That is, you want to look, feel, function good forever. Everyone puts up their hand. Now, put up your hand if you're all going to do the work required forever. The hands stay down.
Mm.
Why? Because you've got to have a life. Oh, yeah, that's it. Oh, yeah. Oh, there's my guy. You've got to have a life. Okay. You got to have a life. Let's explore that. What does that mean? So does that mean if you're not eating shit or getting pissed or falling down or doing dumb things that are inconsistent with your values or goals, does that mean you're not living your best life or you're not having a life? Oh, no, no, but that's, you said to me, you got to have a life. So what does having a life mean? I would suggest that having a life means walking around in your best body with your best health, your best mindset, doing your best job, being in your best relationship, having the best lifestyle. That doesn't mean it's all going to be perfect, of course, because nothing is perfect and no one is perfect. But what's required for you to live more optimally or more ideally or more congruently or more authentically or more in alignment? You know, I believe that there needs to be a deep, 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 deep internal revolution, not an external solution. A deep, deep internal revolution, not an external solution. Because I have seen people with not much talent or potential or knowledge or resources or support. I've seen many people do fucking unbelievable things when they were 100% committed to doing the work.
Yep.
You and I spoke with a lady yesterday who, Marie, who I'm not sure the timeline of our episodes, but she'll either be up soon or she was up on recently. By the time you guys hear this, I'd say she's probably been on recently. But she literally fell down a mountain 450 meters and hit rocks all the way and was given no chance of survival. They basically went to retrieve her body. The rescue crew basically went just to collect a body. They got there and she wasn't dead, obviously. And, you know, I mean, she pretty much broke everything in her body. Yeah. You know, 15 ribs, broke her spine, broke her neck, broke her pelvis, broke her foot, had her kidney, her liver, her lungs shut down. She was on a ventilator. She was in a coma for a month and a half. She was, you know, and...
Her skull.
Now, here's the thing. What's that?
Her skull.
Oh, that's right. Skull. She had an internal brain hemorrhage, an external brain hemorrhage, a form of a stroke. And here's the thing, right? And we spoke to her as we're recording this. We spoke to her yesterday. And what this woman, what this fucking incredible, amazing, inspiring woman has been able to do, because she has just tapped into this fucking reservoir of possibilities and potential that most of us don't tap into. She is not gifted. She said it. She's not genetically gifted. She's not, there's nothing special in inverted commas about her other than her thinking and her behaving. And all of that is optional. Now, I know this sounds melodramatic, but when I talk to people and they start to complain about how hard their life is, I want them to sit down with Marie. And you can go, oh, yeah, but it's all relative. Maybe. But guess what? Where does our reality come from? I'm not talking about our situation, circumstance, environment. I'm not talking about our external world. I'm talking about our internal reality. It comes largely from our stories. And if our story is, oh, I deserve this piece of cake or whatever. And by the way, I'm not anti-cake or pizza. I'm not saying, whatever your issue is, you need to apply this principle, or you don't need to do anything. But I'm talking about applying these ideas and principles to your challenge. It might have nothing to do with food or your body. It could be something else. But what I know, and I've seen it time and time again, like with Johnny that got blown up, with my old man that had a heart attack and died three times, like with Marie that fell down a mountain, that normal people can do fucking incredible things when they have a story in their mind that says, oh, this is not optional anymore. This is not something I'm going to do if I'm inspired or motivated. This is something that I'm going to do. That thing that I used to do, I don't do that anymore. I don't do that anymore. This is my new normal. This is my, not only is this new my new normal, I don't have a choice now. I can't do the things I used to do. I literally can't do the things I used to do. So now I have to adjust and adapt to build this new life. And what I have said many times is, we see what happens when people are backed into a corner through medical reasons or some kind of life-threatening experience or some kind of catastrophe. We see repeatedly people who have not been able to do certain things turn their habits, thinking, life and behaviors around almost in a day because they had an experience. So what that tells us is that ability was always there. What happened in the experience? Well, what happened was there was a complete shift in thinking. Because the mind is the driver. The mind is the driver. Somebody said to me yesterday, how are you going with your PhD? And I went, yeah, you know, it's work, you know. And they're like, do you regret starting it? I went, no.
Yep.
And they went, is it as hard as you thought it would be? And I went, harder. And I thought it would be hard.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, if you were going to start, like if you didn't have it and you got the, would you, if you started again, like, would you do it again? I go, 100%.
Yep.
You know, and so like I'm constantly learning new things and I'm constantly, and it's not even about my area of research that I'm learning so much. I'm learning, of course, because I'm studying and I'm doing a literature review with lots of other kind of intersecting psychological theories and constructs and how they interact or intersect or relate to my stuff, all that, all the psychology, that's cool. That's relatively interesting. Relatively easy. It's very interesting. It's relatively easy. But what's hard for me is learning how to load 100 surveys into Qualtrics and learn all of these programs and all of this technology and learn how to do, you know, it's the, because I'm 57 and not 27, it's all the technology and all the stuff that, you know, like even last time I studied at university was 20 years ago. And that, you know, there were still computers around, but it was still very, I mean, we still literally had a library full of books.
Yep.
Where I am, there's no library. There are no books. There's no physical library. There's not, oh, let's walk into the, because nobody uses them. Not
yeah.
where I'm at anyway, not at PhD level. It's all online academic journals. You know, yep. It's different. But I think once you go, and by the way, could I fuck up and fail? I could. I hope I don't. But I'm practical. I go, well, of course it's hard. It's a fucking PhD. Of course it's hard. Of course you're tired. Of course it sucks. Of course it's long hours. Of course it's a massive commitment. You're not doing a fucking, you know, you're not doing a four-week TAFE course in fucking cake making. God bless all the cake makers. You know, it's like, this is what you took on, you fucking idiot. So that's what's required. Don't complain. So I don't complain. But if someone says to me, is it hard? I'll tell them the truth. Yeah. Is it exhausting? Yep. Would you do it again? Yep. And you know why I'd do it again? Because one, in a weird way, it is fun. In a weird way. I kind of, sometimes pain is fun, you know?
Yep.
But also what it's doing is I'm developing new skills. I'm learning a new language. If you break your life into, pretend your life is a whole bunch of rooms. You know, it's just your life is a composite of different rooms. And one room you go in and there's your family. There's your mum and dad, Melissa, and your sister and your brother-in-law and fucking Hugo and what's her name, the little one? Not Hugo, Libby. Don't tell me. What are the kids' names?
Olivia and Alexander.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one room and then you go to another room and there's work and then you go to another room and you know, depending on where you're at, you have different levels of experience or different kinds of experience. So, for example, when I come into the podcast room, which is one of the rooms in the house that is my life, you know, it's fun, it's enjoyable. There's a level of confidence and competence because I've done this many, 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 many times. And before that, I did a lot of radio. And so I come in here and as objective as I can be, I go, I'm not bad at this. Yep. I'm okay at this. This is what I do. But then I walk into the PhD room in my life and I'm like, fucking L plates on and training wheels and falling down and getting up and bumping into things and asking dumb questions. But that's the room that I'm in when I'm doing academia. Then I go into the public speaking room that is part of my life. I go, I'm not bad here either. I've done this a lot. I'm okay.
Yeah.
You know, then I go into the, you know, the managing my body room. And, you know, bits of that, there are like there are different cupboards in that room. There's the exercise cupboard, there's the food cupboard, there's the lifestyle cupboard. So even in that room, there are sub-rooms, you know. And this is the thing. Like what we do is we tend to stay in the rooms where we're most comfortable. Mm. But what the byproduct of that is, we don't grow. The byproduct of that is when we get forced into another room, we're fucked because we never leave our own room. We love being safe and comfortable and familiar and predictable. And we love, but this is the thing, like when you are stepping out of, back to our topic, when you are stepping out of a behavioral program that doesn't work, or a habit that doesn't work, or a lifestyle that doesn't work, or a situation that doesn't work, you're stepping into new territory and part of your brain will fight that.
Mm.
Part of your brain will fight that because your brain's like, fuck, we're not sure what's going on over here. So get fucked. Let's go back to the couch that we know.
Yeah. And just also all of a sudden it's not as exciting as it seemed in your head when you were picturing it or thinking about it to begin with, in the reality of when you're trying to do whatever that task is and you're into day 47 of an ongoing journey, it's nowhere near as fun. But exactly. It has to be done.
Exactly. That's right. And then, and we've spoken many times about, you know, the practical reality that motivation is temporary and motivation is certainly valuable when it's there. But we know that some people stay motivated for 3 hours, some people 3 days, some 3 weeks, but nobody stays permanently motivated, like in that state of motivate, in that emotional, that heightened emotional state of excitement, anticipation. You know, nobody stays in that state permanently. People have peaks and troughs and good and bad days. And so we go, all right, well, let's acknowledge the impermanence of that state. Now, how do we create the permanence of this habit?
Mm.
How do I, the dude who starts and stops and who is or has been dependent on motivation to get there, how do I become... How do I discard that addiction?
Yeah.
How do I discard that dependence? So if it's there, I'll use it because it's a great tool, but when it's not there. So, you know, becoming ungiveupable is about how do I keep doing what I need to do to live my purpose or my values or my goals or to create my optimal outcomes or to be aligned to who I say I want to become. How do I do that when I can't be fucked? How do I do that when everyone else would give up? How do I do that when I would have given up in the past? How do I do that when I don't, in inverted commas, want to in the moment? How do I do that? And this is why just trying a new program doesn't work. Because it's about our default setting. It's about what's happening in us. You can do all the programs. And this is why some people get results on one program and other people don't get results on the same program. Because if it was about the program, everyone would get the same outcome.
Mm.
It's about the individuals doing the program. You know, I might have mentioned this once before, but I read something the other day and it's in one of the groups that... I need to not get myself in trouble. But anyway, I'll just say it. Someone posted, I don't know if I said this to you, might have been tier four, I don't know. I can't remember all the shit I say, but anyway, it's worth repeating. So somebody was coming towards the end of their 12 weeks of body challenge program and they were doing their final photos and the caption was, is it pizza o'clock yet?
Oh,
the caption was, you know, here are my final photos. Is it pizza o'clock yet?
Right.
So, and by the way, this person looked amazing. But isn't it funny that we do this temporary thing, 84 days, and we look different and we change our eating and we change our exercise and we change our regime and our operating system and we change, you know, what we're doing day to day. But the one thing that this person posts about is going and eating junk food now. Wow, now I'm poof, right?
Mm.
And it's not about the pizza. It's about the thinking. It's about the, why are you rewarding yourself with food that you avoided for the last 84 days? Now, you avoided that food for a reason. The reason is you wanted to change your body and how you looked and felt and functioned, and you did. And now you look good. And now you feel good. And now you're functioning well. And now you're rewarding yourself with that thing that is actually at odds with what you've been doing.
Yeah.
You know, and this thinking, this, I'm going to reward myself with shit. That so fucking annoys me. If you want to eat shit, eat shit. But don't motivate yourself with an unhealthy goal or an unhealthy target. It makes no sense to me. But the problem is that we have a story, and the story is, yeah, but if I don't eat pizza or if I don't eat cake or if I don't drink booze, or, then I'm missing out. Let me tell you, pizza, by the way, can you have some pizza or booze or cake? Of course you can. I've never been against any of those things. When I talk about food, I'm always talking about the story that we have about food, because the story opens the door on the problem. If the story is I'm rewarding myself with pizza because I haven't eaten pizza for 84 days, that's a worry. Because if we said to that person who now looks amazing after 84 days, would you like to look good for 84 days or would you like to look good forever? They're going to say forever.
Mm.
Then I'm going to say, why are you opening the door on this thing that probably, I don't know about this person, but most people who do these programs, including me, I don't do the programs, but I'm putting myself in this group. Most people have had or do have issues with food.
Yeah.
Issues with weight, issues with appearance, right? And we know that managing ourselves around food that's not ideal is part of the problem, right? And this is why I love and hate 12-week, 10-week, 8-week programs. It's why I love and hate them. I love them because they can be the beginning of something. They can be the start of something amazing and transformative. And there's structure and process and accountability, which are all good things. There's camaraderie, which is good. There's social connection, which is good. But there's also this subconscious knowing that, oh, I'm finished in 3 weeks.
Yep.
I'm finished in 2 weeks. I'm finished in a week. I'm finished today. Is it pizza o'clock now? Right? And this is just the reality. And this is the problem. This is the problem that food is not the problem. Our weight is not the problem. The number between our toes is not the problem. Our health state is not the problem. They are all just the consequences of the problem. The problem is that we don't fully commit.
Mm.
The problem is that we give up. Call it what you will. We give up. We stop. We throw in the towel. Again, I said earlier in the show, there's a time to stop. Oh, you've got a medical issue. You've been advised not to. You're in pain. Well, all good. They're not excuses and they're not giving up. They're legit reasons. Reasons are reasons. Tick. But excuses are not reasons. Bullshit stories are not reasons. And when I get people tell me, I would say 2 in 10, it's a legit reason. 8 in 10, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
Or it's a version of bullshit. And I know because I'm the biggest bullshitter. I spent the vast majority of myself lying of my time, of my life, lying.
Yeah.
And so I'm being honest about my lying. Did I lie to myself? Yes. Did I lie to other people about my own habits and behaviors? 100% I did. And it takes courage to say that because it's embarrassing and it's humiliating. But you know what else it is? It's honest.
Mm.
It's honest. And I can get defensive and go, oh, yeah, but you don't, but fuck, and you get fucked and you get rooted and you, or I can go, nah, there is, I'm the problem.
Yeah.
I'm the problem. Not self-loathing, just self-awareness. I'm the problem. You know what? When I ate myself to 120 kilos or thereabouts compared to my current 83, Nobody had a gun to my head. I owned gyms when I was doing that. I was an exercise scientist, for God's sake. I was a personal trainer. I was a gym owner. I was educated. I was intelligent. I had resources. I had information. I had access to everything that I needed, and I ate my way to obesity. Nobody's fault but me. Oh, you shouldn't be hating yourself. I'm not fucking hating myself. I'm telling the truth, like just the truth. There's no self-loathing, just self-awareness. And this is the problem. We're so fucking precious that nobody wants to own up to anything because they feel like they're hating themselves, or someone else is going to go, oh, but you did your best. Bullshit. You fucking didn't do your best, because your best is a better outcome. I didn't do my best, hardly ever. And you know, this is the thing. Of course, there are going to be times when, you know, when you are trying and it's not working, of course. I'm not talking about that. But I'm just going, we need to get to the point where at some stage, and this is why I go around in circles and I go, hey, go read whatever book you want, do whatever program you want, buy whatever pill, powder, potion you want. Cool. And then in 5 years, when you're in the same place, come back to me and let's have a chat. And by the way, I'm not the answer. And by the way, my podcast is not the answer. And by the way, my programs and books, they're not the answer. They're just resources. And anyone who tells you that you are not the answer to your own problems, they're scamming you. They want your money. They want your dough. I'm telling you, you, your brain, your choices, your resilience, your mental toughness, your attitude, your decision-making, that is the solution. That is the solution. You are the solution. And until you maybe hit rock bottom, which I hope you don't need to, maybe you're not going to change. I'm telling you, a lot of people don't change till they hit rock bottom. The other thing I'm going to tell you is you don't need to hit rock bottom. So, folks, I love you. I'm on your team. I know I'm a hard ass sometimes. I'm honest, and I'm, you know, by the way, am I often wrong? Fuck, I'm often wrong. Could I be wrong about this or some of this? Maybe, probably. But what I do know is that I've been in this space helping people change, working with bodies, bums, legs, minds, carbs, fat, protein, micros, macros, thinking, beliefs, values, attitudes, emotions, psychology. I've been working in this space for a very long time with thousands of people. And a common observation and a common experience of mine is people who don't think enough of themselves, who don't believe in themselves, who are always looking for some external antidote. And it's just, sometimes it's just our willingness to say, you know what, I've never really, really consistently done the work and I'm going to do it. And I know it won't be fun, and I'm okay with that. And I'm sick and tired of being that person who's, I'm just done. I don't want to be that. And it's not about having some big cathartic breakthrough or moments or revelation from on high, brothers, sisters, but it's just about, you know, going, yeah, I hear your harps. I know what you're saying, you know. And if your next question is, yeah, but how do I? Well, my question to you is, why won't you? Because you know how. How you change your life is you get up tomorrow and you don't do the same thing that you did today. That's how. You don't eat the way that you ate today. You don't move the way that you ate today. You don't talk. You don't choose the way that you did today, if those things are relevant for you. We literally just start doing what is uncomfortable. That is generally step one. What's uncomfortable? Well, what's uncomfortable is stopping these 10 things that I need to stop. Okay, stop. Or stop one and build on it. Stop two, build on it. And build up to the 10 over time. Be honest, be brave, be brutal with yourself. Not brutal in a destructive, brutal in a healthy way. Yeah, I am doing this. I am fucking up. It is me. Sure, I want to blame people, and sure, I want to go, oh, but you don't understand my situation. I've got, you know, I've got this work and this many kids and this back issue and all those things. And I get it and I understand and you have my sympathy. But guess what? There are lots of people with kids. There are lots of people with jobs. There are lots of people with shit genetics. There are lots of people in less than ideal situations. And while you have my compassion, that's probably not going to change in the next week or two. So what about wherever you are, however well you can do it with whatever you've got available to you, time, energy, resources, knowledge, anything, just start. Just start and put that get out of jail card, that safety net out of the picture. All right, team, there you have it. That is the director's cut. That is the slightly briefer version of Ungiveupable. Hope there were some good takeaways for you. Love you guts. See you next time.